Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with your host, Calican CEO, Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Dr. Denise A. Foster. Aside from being a nurse and healthcare practitioner, Dr. Foster is also the owner of Hemp Haven Chesapeake and the owner and founder of Empirical Cannabis. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Foster.
Hey, good morning. Thank you.
Thank you. No, it's super excited to have you on. You know, as we were speaking before we got on the air, we got to have so many experts in so many areas of the cannabis industry. And, you know, one thing that we're excited to talk to you today about is kind of building that bridge, you know, talking about research-based, science-based, and kind of these high-level topics that, you know, in terms of, you know, your normal layman, laywoman may not have the time to get into all the research and everything like that. So it's important to have people on the ground level, so to speak, and kind of bring it down to people, you know, to better understand. So we're going to be talking about that, along with obviously your background, you know, coming from, you know, healthcare into cannabis, and talking about the endocannabinoid system, phytocannabinoids, and everything along those lines. So super excited. I guess, you know, as we always say, let's start off easy. Where are you located today?
I am on the East Coast of Virginia. I'm in the Southeast Coast of Virginia, actually, in Chesapeake. And we're known as an area called Hampton Roads, Virginia, which encompasses several cities, including Virginia Beach and Norfolk. And this area is heavily military, heavy veteran, but we also have a little dab of North Carolinians as well, because we're right on the border of Virginia and North Carolina. So we really do have the best of both worlds. We have a lot of industry, but we also have a lot of recreation, and that's even gotten better, because just last week or a few weeks ago, our House and Senate in Virginia passed a recreational cannabis law. So we will be implementing our own rec program by 2024.
Amazing, amazing. And then, yeah, there's always challenges. You know, I think we talk about 2024, you know, is my initial reaction is like, wow, it seems a little bit far off. But first and foremost, as we know, time is going by so fast. But I think having a proper plan that comes in over time, I think it's super important, you know, because you notice here, like, for instance, with New Jersey, right, just passed it, everybody's super excited, and they're having problems just getting the program going. And then, you know, it's like, wait, you didn't have this stuff figured out before, you know, so it's kind of this, I think more states can definitely take that as a better blueprint, you know, as we start moving across the map, you know, instead of like, hey, you know, we got to do this, everybody's pining for it, right? And you see that there's a lot of red tape and compliance stuff that goes along with it. But like you said, right, having it a long plan that goes along with it. Now, I got to ask, though, you're in Virginia. Are you also dumped on right now with snow and everything like that? You know, we're talking.
No, fortunately, we have a lot of area that is below sea level. So we're right next to the ocean front on the Atlantic Ocean. So with that, we have a lot of different weather patterns, which keeps the snow Richmond further north and above, like in DC. So we hardly ever get any snow, and watch, we'll probably have a storm now, but we hardly ever, we usually see snow as rain, wet cold rain, but we don't have the blizzards.
Cool. Yeah. I wasn't sure if it was a silly question or not, but I had to ask because I know everybody's kind of going all the way down to Texas. Right. And
right.
I'm sure they weren't really expecting.
Right. Oh yes. No. We don't, we're snowless here right now.
Sweet. Very cool. But yeah, talk to me a little about, you know, in terms of Virginia, you said that, you know, you have some veterans there. Is that something that you're seeing a lot of in terms of what you do? Before we get into your story and your background, I would love to hear just kind of, you know, since you have your ear to the ground, you know, talk to me kind of who are the people who are really coming and wanting to learn more about cannabis these days in Virginia?
It's really a mixed bag. We're a very conservative state. So, of course, everything has been rolling to us from the West, and we are hopefully learning some great lessons from the West as we implement our own program. We can only hope, but for the most part, education, of course, is always key. And that's where my model is stemming from as an educator and a nurse, is to make sure that those in the community understand what these compounds are about. And so the more education that I am able to put out, the more I'm seeing a range of individuals, anywhere from high school and college parents, college age kid parents who are coming in because at this current time, their kids are suffering from anxiety, their kids are suffering from depression and insomnia, all the way up to my veterans. I have a lot of veterans and a lot of ex-federal employees down here who are coming in because they recognize either the value of either the medicinal THC, the Delta 8 that I sell, as well as the CBD. And then I've even got the older crowd. I've got your older adults, 65 and older, your hospice crowd, the families coming in looking for opiate and sedative relief. So it is a range of customers. I would love to start collecting demographics, some demographic information, because I just have so many individuals, it's hard to say which group is more predominant. I will say that the most predominant group is repeat customers because they're coming in and finding that these products really do work.
No, that's great to hear. I mean, it's not so great to hear that, obviously people, anxiety and, veterans, what they deal with PTSD and, the older crowd, obviously with pain and everything, pain management. But, you mentioned there, about helping with opiates and everything like that. And I think we put a lot of emphasis for, based on what we see in terms of numbers, on the older crowd, they seem to be open to it. But, you mentioned something that was really awesome, right? In terms of parents wanting help for their kids who are dealing with anxiety, right? I think that a lot of times we hear that, right? Parents aren't so, they're willing to put their kids on Ritalin, right? I was on Ritalin pretty young, and they're willing to put their kids on, antidepressants and anti-anxiety medicine. But then you mentioned something like cannabis. I'm like, cannabis, what, am I going to get my kid high? And automatically it's like, what kind of parent, and are we allowed to, and the kids and this, that, the other thing, So talk to me a little bit about that in terms of the education, with parents who are open and seeking that, and kind of what you've seen with that in terms of the experience with them and with their children.
The parents coming in have so many different concerns. First is the anxiety and the isolation. They read the data related to what's happening to these children's mental health. They're worried because either there was an issue with anxiety or depression to begin with, and now it's being exacerbated by this isolation and being out of school. We in Virginia and this lower area, we have what's called the hybrid model, where they're returning to school for a few days, but for the most part, the social programs, the athletics programs have all been shut down. So they're coming for their children in many different areas of either the mild anxiety, the mild insomnia, all the way up to the excessive behaviors. I'm working with one parent who is working to get her child off numerous antidepressants and anti-anxieties, but also has a concern because she does a lot of hair pulling and she's basically almost bald because of the level of anxiety that she suffers from. And she's finding that the THC-free gummies in a fairly large dosage of about 50 milligrams per day seems to be helping with that anxiety. And so now we're exploring ways to help reduce that even more using a combination of effects. And we look to make sure that the parents understand, especially the delineations between THC and THC-free, the broad versus the full spectrum. More than likely, they will all opt for the broad spectrum because they are concerned about the age related to the use of THC, but they're not averse to it if it can help with situations in relation to either sleep or that anxiety, because we know that THC in small microdoses might be able to help with that. So they're very open to this, and that's where I think the educational campaign that I have promoted down here for the last 6 months has really started to show how to use these compounds appropriately and safely, as long as there is some medical guidance.
No, that's great. And I think that's where, we have amazing, amazing people in the industry, people who themselves use cannabis, obviously, and have, they've educated themselves. Now you, you know, you're over here with the PhD, MSN, RN, CNE, right? So, you know, Dr. Foster, I really want to hear your story. Talk to me about your background in terms of, you know, your background in school education and everything, and how, you know, your background as a health practitioner has led to what you're doing now with hemp.
I love the fact that I came here late. I was never anti-cannabis, so I can't say that I was anti-cannabis because I have been a nurse for over 37 years. And I was a, I've been a critical care practitioner. I've been a home health administrator. I've worked extensively in home health and hospice. And then, of course, I became an educator, and I've done that for the past 15 years, teaching in graduate and undergraduate nursing programs. And when I was first as a practitioner out in the community, I was involved in the AIDS crisis in the mid-1980s. And at that time in Norfolk, we had a very large gay population. And at that time, of course, we didn't understand the HIV. We didn't understand the virus and how it spread. But we did have a large amount of population affected by it in our area. And so that's when I first started to recognize that these individuals were using a lot of cannabis products, either through the government, because of course at that time there was still a compassionate use program going on, and they were also receiving federally dispensed or FDA approved Marinol, which is the synthetic THC dosage. And so I was never anti-cannabis because these individuals were definitely at risk and for all of the things associated with AIDS, the cachexia, the weight loss, the loss of appetite, the infections, the chronic pain, the chronic insomnia. And so with that, you as a nurse, as a holistic practitioner, you recognize the value of cannabis. So it was in the 80s that I recognized that this was a valid medicine. But of course, being limited in what we could teach in nursing programs, I always taught my pharmacology and pathophysiology students that cannabis was a drug of abuse. That's what we have been told for, you know, for decades, is that cannabis was a drug of abuse. It's why it's on Schedule One. My students would giggle and laugh at that.
It is silly. I mean, it's more than silly. It's absolutely, it was pissing me off, but you know, it's
they would laugh, and because they knew the farce, the jig was up, so to speak. There was no question that it was not at the same level as heroin. And so with that, as being an educator, and trying to educate the next generation of nurses, trying to square that circle, so to speak, and teaching that cannabis was a drug of abuse was where my limitations were. So as in practice, I'm seeing it being used as a medicine, but in academia, all I could teach was it was a drug of abuse. I was also very disconcerted that I was never able to teach about the endocannabinoid system. I did teach anatomy and physiology and nutrition and how microbiology works, etc. And I was never able to teach these students about this extremely important system. So moving forward, I would say about 7-8 years ago, I encountered one of my best friends. She became my best friend. And we taught together at one of the colleges. And then we both had sons that were of the same school age. My son was on a trajectory for college. Her son was being busted for truancy and smoking weed. And so she would shelter him, and she would say, just hang out in her garage and bring in all your buddies for a sesh so you don't get busted by the cops. So what did I say as a good friend? What did I say? I say, you know, you need to get that boy into rehab. You know, you need to quit enabling that boy. Yeah. And she said, no. She said, but you need to look at the research, because we all move through these decades with blinders on. Those of us, especially that were disconnected, I would say, from the grow industry and disconnected from the hidden industry, we knew that it was work. We knew that it had value. But those of us that were in the spotlight, as for instance me in academia, we weren't allowed to expand on that. And so therefore, we had so many other different things to handle we didn't have time to go back and do some investigations into what we were actually teaching. So I give my best friend all the credit in the world because she pointed me to the research. And what I found astounded me. What I found about the cannabis research and how it's been going on since the 1960s was just dumbfounding to me. And even going back further than that, in the 1930s, when the first cannabinoid was isolated and described, way, way back in the 1930s. And then understanding the history behind hemp, the history behind cannabis and how it came to our country, how it's been used for millennia as medicine in many different cultures and many different civilizations, it really made my head spin. And it was the fact that I learned that the government owns the patent on cannabinoids as medicine that really made me do a double take. I was like, I can no longer believe what I'm being told. The research speaks for itself. And because of that, I'm tired of pretending that this doesn't work anymore. From that, I got involved with the American Cannabis Nurses Association.
What was the timeline here on this?
All right, so we're looking probably at the mid 2000s. Okay. 2015, 2016, somewhere around there. 2017, somewhere around there. And it was in 2017 that I got involved in the American Cannabis Nurses Association. I became a board of director member, and then eventually secretary for that organization, because again, as nurses, we need to remain, every year we become nominated and voted as the most trusted profession, according to Gallup. This has been the trend for the last 15, 17 years. I think we're on the 15th year of every year Gallup recognizes nurses as the most trusted profession. So this is a very important, I guess, accolade, because we need to remain the most trusted profession. We are the only profession that looks at a patient, at a group, at a community, at a population from a holistic perspective. We don't just treat the body. We don't just treat the mind. We try to incorporate the holistic approach of mind, body, spirit medicine, and recognizing that cannabis touches on all of these points related to its use as a medicine. We have to understand from the nursing perspective that it's a very important aspect of medical care, because our patients are now using it as it's rolled out into the medical states. And pretty soon, more than likely, the federal government will be doing some sort of legalization to a degree. So we need to be prepared as a whole in the form of nurses and other healthcare practitioners. That's where I decided to use. I've been working with medical cannabis patients across the country. We were doing telehealth. We've had telehealth at least in and teleeducation. At least I've had that in the last 10 to 15 years. So I went ahead and have worked with medical cannabis patients across the country, because at the beginning, these patients didn't have a lot of direction to go to, and they're looking for answers, and they're looking for that veracity and that trust in relation to what a nurse can bring to the table versus what a doctor might prescribe or recommend, or what a bud tender might prescribe or recommend. So those are where I came from. I had a lot of interest in the science behind it, because it's a fascinating compound. It has a lot of potential. I decided to open my own cannabis dispensary, quasi-cannabis dispensary, because I am tired of waiting for the government to come through. I am also concerned because these compounds, both CBD and THC, seem to be popping up everywhere. Of course, online, in the corner drugstore, in department stores. And what you're seeing is a safety concern as well as an educational concern. So that's where my platform has been. In addition to working with medical cannabis patients through my empirical cannabis business, I also am working with my own community here. I have been working, I was hired as the director of patient education. And so I'm working with the Shangri-La Medical Cannabis Dispensaries, the five locations in Missouri. And so with those kind of adventures with what I'm doing, it helps to support so many different levels of both safety and education, which is where my model is.
Wow, that was an incredible story. I really thank you for sharing that. you know, and I love hearing that because, you know, so many times we hear people are either like all for it, right? And they've always kind of been for it. Or you hear sometimes where people were anti-cannabis or maybe just like not even whatever, you know, somewhere in the middle. And, you know, God forbid it was some sort of, you know, negative event that happened in their life that, you know, turned them around or something like that. And I'm just so happy to hear that it was just, you know, your friend telling you, hey, you know what, you need to do the research. And you're like, you know what, I do need to do the research. And you took that, you know, instead of like getting pissed or fighting back or whatever else. Cause like you said, there's so much stigma there, right? You're an educator. You're teaching the youth of America, you know, the youth of tomorrow, and telling them, hey, this is horrible. This is a horrible drug. And most of these kids are probably sitting there high at that time. Right. So it's like, you know, you can't tell them that you're going to grow another finger, or you're going to go crazy, or you're going to do something stupid, you know, because, you know, like you said, the jig is up at that moment, right? You know, you lose all credibility. And I got to say too, you know, I really appreciate the story that you shared, you know, in terms of, you know, my son, her son, you know, because I was both of those sons, you know, I was both those sons together, where it was like, you know, straight A student, you know, doing really well at the same time, skipping school and going to our house. My parents didn't know that our house was one of the places all the kids were coming to smoke, you know, and everything like that. And, you know, or having another buddy's house who you know, his parents were like your friend's parents, right? Where it's totally cool. Hey, you know what? Come over, sit in the garage, chill in the garage, play music, do whatever you guys are going to do. You guys are stay here, everything like that. As opposed to having, you know, making a big deal about it and everything like that. So I really appreciate you sharing that, you know, on a personal level. Now, you know, a few things that stuck out, you know, first and foremost, you're so right about, you know, aside from the numbers saying it, right, but that nurses are the most trusted profession, right? Because I think, you know, we talk about, and we touched on it at the beginning, right? We talk at, you know, science and science-based, and people are so much obviously into it, right? But it's still kind of this, like, this area, people don't really know what's going on. And the same thing with doctors, right? So we feel a little bit more comfortable to go and talk to doctors, maybe, maybe not, right? But you have good doctors, you have some really shitty doctors, you know, and some people who just don't know what they're talking about. And it really can affect a person, because a person wants to respect their doctor and they want to listen to their doctor, right? That's why you go to the doctor. So you just get these weird kind of viewpoints sometimes from people who been thinking the same way for 30, 40 years. And it doesn't just have to be with cannabis. It could be with anything, you know, and all kinds of stigmas that go along with it. But I love that, you know, both of my mother-in-laws are nurses, right? I have so much respect for nurses, myself doing medical research for many years and seeing what nurses go through and everything on a daily basis. So it's, you know, talk to me a little bit about, you know, you're obviously a nurse who right away was like, all right, cool, I'm doing research. Oh my gosh, they've been lying to us. Not only that, but the government owns all the patents, right? I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on here under the surface. I mean, would you say that this is kind of a movement that's happening with nurses, like you said, you know, holistic and wanting to really help your patients, right? Or is this something that you're seeing there's still a lot of work to be done there, you know? And if so, are you seeing that there's like nurses like in one line that's maybe different, or is it just kind of based on personality? Or talk to me a little bit about those things.
I think where we are in our profession as nurses, we're at a crossroads. We are challenged, or we are actually, our profession is founded on the tenets of Florence Nightingale. Florence Nightingale is credited as being the first nursing researcher because, of course, during the Crimean War, she kept her own data related to the safety of the environment and wounds and cleanliness and hygiene, et cetera. And so she was really a very holistic practitioner, thinking not only about the body, but, you know, how does noise and how does environment impact the health and recovery of individuals who have been injured traumatically on the battlefield? And so with that approach, we have an obligation to look at our communities and at our patients and our population from that holistic perspective. And so that's, as I mentioned earlier, why the use of this plant is so strategic in helping either in the prevention, the primary prevention of disease, or the treatment and recovery of disease in either mind, body, or spirit. So with that understanding as a nurse, you mentioned that we have good doctors and bad doctors. We have good good nurses and bad nurses. We have to uphold the ethics of our integrity. We have to uphold that trust. We have to uphold the fact that where I see us separated from, say, the physician level is that physicians can be compromised because of their power, because of the fact that they have the ability to dispense drugs, because they have the ability to steer the direction of health in relation to, is your scan approved? Did you get the right test? Did you get the right drug, et cetera? Where nurses fall in is kind of that medium layer of either we're either going to support what a physician says, or we're going to have evidence to maybe say it may not be the right direction, or there could be other options available. We have come to a point in our nursing profession where nurses are discouraged, nurses are burnt out, and from a educator standpoint, as I mentioned, I teach in several colleges across the United States, and even in a few international colleges as well. So I'm working with nursing students who are already in practice and who are already, they may have only been in the profession less than 5 years, but they're already discouraged because procedures, and despite all of our advances in medicine and all of the pharmaceutical drugs and treatments that we have to offer, our population seems to be getting sicker, not healthier. And when you think about where we have been as a whole in promoting health, we don't seem to be promoting health care. We seem to be promoting sick care. And this becomes a burden mainly for the nurses who are now working with these sicker patients. We have a nursing shortage as far as staffing in our country. And so therefore you have a higher acuity level, meaning the severity of the disease burden on any floor is higher, which means the nurses have to work one-to-one, but they usually don't have that luxury. Their ratio to staff to patient ratio, I'm hearing from my students, is anywhere from 1 to 6 to maybe even 1 to 8. And that's a very unsafe situation. And it causes nurses a lot of anxiety because we enter the profession with this dream of being able to sit down and work with our patient one-to-one and educate them. We're not seeing that. And so with that understanding that we have an obligation to care for our patients holistically, we have, I think, an unprecedented opportunity to enter cannabis in a time where it is going to become a valid option as a medicine, but it's going to be a valid option also for nurses who want to explore their own ability to create a space where they can promote health from a proactive approach. I believe for the first time in my 37 years as a nurse that I am actually helping individuals on a one-to-one basis. And I am either helping to prevent disease from happening, or I am helping to restore a condition of health if a condition has already been on the scene for several years in mind, body, and spirit. And so with nurses coming to the table because of their knowledge, but mostly because of their mission and because of their philosophy related to treating the patient holistically, using safety and patient-driven evidence, patient-driven successes, this is an opportunity for nurses to really expand and not only become a promoter for health within their communities, but to also satisfy their own reasons for going into the profession. Hospitals are not the answers for nurses anymore. And I hear that and I read that in my students' submissions. They're all moving out of the clinical bedside because it is just too much of a burden. It is too much of a strain on their own mind, body, spirit health. And so therefore they're moving into administration, although I caution them that that's not the answer either, because then there's always somebody higher up from them that has to make those mandates and has to make those decisions that are going to impact how nurses practice. The most interesting thing, I think, related to nursing in this country and how nurses can get involved is the fact that the National Council of State Boards of Nursing in this country in 2018 published their National Nursing Guidelines for Medical Marijuana. And they proposed 6 tenets of nursing education and nursing practice with patients who use medical marijuana, because they recognized that this is a phenomenon that is not going to go away. And so with that publication in 2018, nurses are now obligated to understand their state's legislation and medical marijuana programs. They are mandated and obligated to now understand the intricacies of the endocannabinoid system and the cannabinoids. They need to understand the compositions of the phytocannabinoids and the terpenes and how the pharmacology of these plant compounds interact with the human body, because we do know that they interact. And it's also one of those safety issues where we have to educate our nurses into how to help our patients use these safely. We are the educators. We are entrusted and the public's health to work with them on a level that is beyond that of just a prescription and a brief office or clinical visit. We are the ones that sit with the patient and look at their social determinants. For instance, when I mentioned I have a heavy military presence in our area, the first thing I want to know is, does your job require any point in time going to be subjected to job loss because you've tested positive for that 0.3% of THC in these hemp compounds? Well, we know that that's going to affect your health because you're going to lose your job. So let's stay away from the full spectrum and instead point you to broad spectrum. Our nurses are going to be the ones asking those questions. And so this is an opportunity, I think, for nurses to figure out for themselves how they can become more proactive and help not only our population, but also themselves prevent this feeling of frustration, because for 37 years, I haven't been able to help anybody. I've been able to guide them, and I've been able to help them assuage or diminish the negative effects of either treatments or pharmaceuticals, but I've never been able to actually help anyone recover. I've never been able to help actually reduce someone's anxiety or reduce their inflammation or improve their sleep unless I promoted a pill. So that's where I am as a nurse, and I think that our nursing profession has a long way to go. I do see it in my students' submissions of their examples of their writing, and I do see it being slowly trickled into the nursing curricula. But it's going to be a long time, I think, before we get to the point where the validation is there in either the medical colleges or the nursing colleges to promote this as a comparable and complementary alternative medicine.
I'm glad you bring that up too, you know, in terms of the burnout. And thank you for that, you know, the burnout that nurses feel. I mean, the stress, talking about the stress and anxiety, you know, it's incredible. You know, 12-hour shifts and sometimes 24-hour shifts, and, you know, it's crazy. And then, like you said, right, when you're working in a hospital, right, you're helping people, but you're dealing with people when they're at their absolute lowest, right? And the family, when they're at their absolute lowest, and having to deal with those personalities, obviously, at that time, right? And having to deal with those interactions of you know, people who are really hurting, and, you know, family members who may mean their best, and they're, you know, going about it the wrong way, so to speak, you know, they're also under high stress and anxiety at that time, you know, so it's really a recipe for disaster in that regard. And then also, you know, the admin side, you know, and going in there and having people kind of overseeing you and making those decisions for you, right? So I guess on that note as well, you know, in terms of, you know, you mentioned healthcare, sick care, and I love that, you know, I don't love that that's what's going on, but thank you for bringing that up in that way, you know, in terms of, yeah, you know, profiting off of people being sick, not profiting off of people getting better. There's no money in that. You know, I mean, any any drug dealer knows that, you know, it's like, you know, you get it, you make the money on the comeback, right? Not on the, not on the first sale, right? You can give it away the first time if you want, you know, as long as they come back, you know, for years to come kind of thing. So, you know, that being said, you know, talking about how you're seeing that your students are coming in and they're, there's kind of that shift in mentality, right? And this is something that we're, you know, you're seeing change over time. Now, is this something that, you know, even if this is something that you as an educator are able to affect these nurses and they themselves want to go and do this, is this something that, you know, kind of contradicts that sick care, right? So they're going to get shut down right away? Are they going to have to be like rogue nurses, so to speak, you know, or is this something that, that can change, you know, from the inside out? How is that process going to look like?
3, 2, 1, 0, ignition,
liftoff. We at Calican are passionate about cannabis and CBD marketing, branding, SEO content, and web design. If you are a cannabis owner and you know you need an uptick in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us today.
I'm hoping that it changes from the inside out. I like to think of myself as a renegade in this position, right, in this profession, because cannabis nurses are a new phenomenon, and we do have support, obviously, from the National Council of State Boards of Nursing, because we have now been obligated to understand this, because we are obligated to care for our population in a manner that is unlike any other of the healthcare professions. We are the only profession in healthcare so far that has the these particular guidelines. I have to applaud the National Council for promoting these and publishing these, which sets up nurses for a very unique ability to be that intermediary, the peer-reviewed scientific literature from the academics and from the institutions related to these compounds and related to the science that underpins what we are discovering in relation to the body's systems and the external phytocannabinoids. But we need a way to disseminate that, and that is going to have to start in the academic institutions of either of any of the colleges of health. There are many colleges across the country. For instance, the University of Maryland has their own master's program in the pharmacology of the science of cannabis. And that's a great way to take someone who has already had their undergraduate degree, but wants more a specific focus as we develop the science behind these compounds. Where I see it as a nurse is that we need to instill into our nurses how these compounds are no longer, should no longer be considered drugs of abuse. We need to teach the endocannabinoid system and how it interacts with the all of the other systems, and how we can use this knowledge to our advantage by introducing these microdoses of the cannabinoids and the terpenes and whatever else we discover that we don't even know yet. When we think about, when I used to teach with my students and I had large lecture halls or I had small clinical groups, no matter where I was teaching, one of my first lectures or my first clinical instructions were, our job as nurses is to put ourselves out of a job. If we do our job correctly, you will not need a nurse. You will not need a doctor, because you will be eating right. You may be meditating to reduce the stress or anxiety. You may not be on any prescriptions or any need any treatments or procedures, because you'll be well in mind, body, and spirit. So when you think about it that way, that seems to be the approach to healthcare, is moving an individual or a population along the spectrum for health, not let's keep you coming back to get another prescription refill. Not, oh, now you've deteriorated to the point where we need to do a extreme intervention, say open heart surgery or some type of replacement with hardware. When we enter the body that way, we are now setting up the inflammatory and immune response. And that's just a physiological system that we will never be able to remove from the equation. And so with that understanding, as nurses, we should be promoting for endocannabinoid health. You don't even need to use cannabis for that. We know of many other different ways to stimulate and balance the endocannabinoid system. So it's not really all about cannabis, although the endocannabinoid system works most efficiently with these cannabinoids, either phyto or endogenous cannabinoids. But we have to understand that we can use multiple approaches and multiple ways to influence our body's own health using this knowledge. And so as nurses, and from my perspective as an educator, I am going to be biased by saying we have to put this information into our curricula. Right now, I have one course that I teach in a program. It is an undergraduate program where we do talk about the use of cannabis in hospice care. So this could be a great way to start sneaking it into the curriculum, so to speak, because with hospice care, we already know that multiple states have as a qualifying condition the fact that it's a fatal disease, right? A hospice type situation. So with air approach, using it in place of opiates and in place of sedatives, and use it as an appetite stimulant and as a pain reliever. So when we see this slowly moving into the curriculum, I am hoping that it eventually will take off, especially when the Council of Nursing decide at one point that they will begin putting test questions on the nursing boards. The National Council of State Boards of Nursing, they operate and manage and administer the state boards of nursing across the country. So in order to become a practicing nurse, you have to pass your boards. When they have already now rolled into the fact that this is possibly an obligation for nurses, I'm not sure that in the next 3 years that we'll see it on the NCLEX, the national boards that nurses must take, but I am pretty sure that within the next 6 years, they roll out a new test plan every 3 years. I am fairly certain that within the next 6 years, federally legal and state legal continues to expand, nurses are going to be obligated to have this knowledge, and it has to start in the academic institutions.
Well, no, definitely, you know, and that's kind of the key there, right? I mean, you know, there was a time, you know, in the 90s, the mid 90s, where you could just put your head in the sand and pretend like I wasn't there. And then, you know, in the mid 2000s, it's like, oh, we still need some more research. We need some more of this. You know, we're at the point now where you can't, you know, with, like you said, legalization going on across the country, and then hopefully federally, if they do it right, you know, in the next few years, however long it takes, as long as they do it right, I don't care, you know, how long it takes. But, you know, this is going to be something that you can't hide anymore. Right. So it's, you know, and I'm so grateful to have you on, because this is something that, you know, not just are you there, you know, in talking to patients, you're also there educating, right? The nurses of tomorrow, you know, and it may be something like we're saying, right? Sometimes these things take time in terms of the rollout in Virginia, right? Or the curriculum that comes out for nurses every 3 years, right? And it's going to be a day where there's going to be nurses who are out there talking to their patients, right? And they're going to be educators actually teaching other nurses, right? So you see how your influence is going to be a huge wave that really, really affects so many people in a positive, positive, amazing way. I really want to commend you so much for all the work that you're doing, you know, and you know, not just that, but they're in your store as well, right? I would love to talk about Hemp Haven as well, you know, changing gears, because, you know, you're there doing it on all fronts, right? With patients, with other nurses, educating, and there, and, you know, so to speak, in front of your customers as well, right? So talk to me a little bit about what, you know, Hemp Haven, you spoke about it a little bit, you know, and also something that has come up a couple of times in the conversation is, you know, talking about the THC gets a lot of pub, obviously CBD gets a lot of pub, but, you know, you understand the research, you understand the science, and we're talking about cannabinoids, right? And your store is Hemp Haven, right? It's not CBD Haven, right? You know, so you have, you're talking about a lot of different things, and, you know, CBN, maybe CBG, right? CBC, these other different cannabinoids that don't get as much pub may be actually what you may need for yourself, right? As opposed to this, depending on that. So talk to me how all this stuff plays into your approach there at Hemp Haven, what you're doing.
I love the fact that many of my former nursing students are visiting me because I might have given them a hard time in their pharmacology class, but they learned something. And so, but they also know that, you know, Dr. Foster doesn't do anything, you know, half-assed, I should say, right? If I'm into this, it's because there is something behind this in which I have a belief, right? In which I feel the need to promote. And so I'm getting not only my nursing students, I am also starting to see my healthcare peers, my behavioral mental health practitioners either come in for themselves or sending referrals for patients. I've got cardiologists, I've got CRNAs, I've got a lot of the healthcare peers starting to appear in the store because of these educational components. And then of course I steer them in the direction for research for themselves. Here we go with the snowball effect. This is always a prime way for communication theory, the model of the snowball. It just takes one little flake to start that snowball rolling. So that's where we are in here. When I decided to, I wanted to open up some semblance of a storefront in order to promote education. I've been working with my other business, Empirical Cannabis, and I've been working mainly with professional peers, physicians, DOs, osteopaths, naturopaths, pharmacists, presenting to communities and groups. I just did a 4-hour training for an addiction group, a state addiction group in our state, because they're recognizing how these compounds can be used to supplement or reduce addiction and then therefore deaths. But where I wanted to go with my store was I didn't just want to open a smoke shop. I didn't want to open just a vape shop. I wanted to have an actual clinic approach. I wanted it to feel more of a clinic an educational type model. And I was meeting resistance when I was working with my other business, Empirical Cannabis. I would try to contract for spaces or contract with practitioners to provide this education, and everyone's busy. At first, even the public libraries were telling me, oh no, you can't come into our public library and talk about cannabis. You know, that's a no-no. So this is where I was meeting some resistance. And so through my cannabis nurse network, I was able to figure out or find an already established business that I could buy into a model. The Hemp Haven model began in Kansas City, Missouri, and they have 7 stores. They have saturated Missouri because that's where a lot of the medical cannabis and now the recreational cannabis has kind of been in the Midwest, especially with a lot of the hemp growing. When I found their model, which was mostly aligned with mine, the educational promoting from the fact of education and research versus just I've got a bunch of CBD in the back, let me sell you this, there's where I wanted to focus. And so I opened Hemp Haven. I started this journey in 2019 and worked to open the first and only Hemp Haven franchise on the East Coast. There was one after me that is now open in San Antonio, Texas. But we all have this model where it's very clinically based. It's very research and educational approaches where we want to have you come, the customer come and talk to us on a one-to-one basis so that we can guide you appropriately using the educational tools that we have. We are all pretty much healthcare practitioners that came to this business because we were dissatisfied with the clinical side of it. We'd worked in the clinical side of it, and we were tired of banging our heads against the wall, trying to help people with their health behaviors and their health concerns. So when I opened the store, I was scheduled to open in March of 2020. Well, we know what happened then. Yeah. So it first took me a while to even find a space. This is the 5th space. I was able to talk with the owner, the landlord. The other 4, once they found out that I was going to be selling CBD and other hemp products, they wanted nothing to do with me. Sure. So there's still that discrimination, and at least on this side of the country, because they didn't want to have any of the liability, because of course it's a new phenomenon and technically it's still federally illegal. My insurance is double the industry standard because of that reason, right? We're not sure what the CBD is going to do to people, even though the World Health Organization declared it the safest drug in the world. There's an ABC store, an alcohol store right across the street from me. Yeah, so, yeah. You know, I'm sure that's safer, right? But anyway, when I decided to open in April or March, March. Of course, couldn't open because of the pandemic concerns. I finally wound up opening in August, and it has been while it has been slow growing, it has been growing significantly. And that is probably because more individuals are recognizing the benefits. And so word of mouth is growing. I have my healthcare peers, as I mentioned, now out in their own practices, making referrals to me, or even sending themselves and their family members in. Over Christmas, I had a bunch of family flying in, meaning customers' families were flying in, and we're brought into the store. And now I'm sending product out to them wherever they may live because they tried what I recommended, and now they are continuing to use it for their conditions. And it's been just a wonderful, I think, approach because of the fact that I get comments that I came to you because you are a nurse. I came to you because you don't look like a smoke shop. Or I had one particular customer who said, I went down the street and I sat in the parking lot and I watched people coming in and out of there. And I was really not too keen on going in there, because we do have the older generation who is still have that stigma, right? A stoner is a stoner, and you know, you don't want to get involved with that crowd, right? So they come here with a little bit of an understanding that this is a different space for them to engage in a conversation and education, because they'll share with me some very intimate details because of the fact that I'm a nurse, that I'm sure that bud tenders may hear at a medical dispensary, but certainly vape shops and smoke shops don't hear, because they're not the population that you think of to tell your deep, dark secrets about your own health conditions. So I'm seeing a huge climb in business in the last few months. I have been able to engage a local newspaper that has agreed to publish a monthly article, that is education-based, that comes from a place of research. I'm also now being endorsed and promoted on a news radio station down here. It's the number one radio station in this area. And you mentioned before, what do? You bring some free products over there. Here, try these out. And now they are on board because they recognize that it's number one, legal, and number two, they work. So between the print media, the radio media, and just word of mouth, it seems to be really growing well. I hope to continue this model and open another franchise in my area because we, as I mentioned, we are a large area. We have 7 cities combined. And so there's always a need for these customers, this population, to understand how to use these compounds for their well-being. And that's where I approach it from. This is something that can either restore or prevent an event and prevent a condition, and certainly bring you back to wellness.
Wow, that's so great. And yeah, hopefully, as you're saying, putting your other profession out of a job, right, in terms of, but this is growing. And I love too, finding a model that works, and recreating that, also mentioning, it's so, can't believe it's still a thing, right? The joke of, a smoke shop, going into a vape shop and getting CBD, or the gas station or a liquor store, right? All these places, right? Carrying, CBD products, hemp products. And then people, it's like, it didn't work for me. It's like, well, where'd you get it from? It's like, oh, I got it from the gas station. I don't know.
Or what's the difference? I got it off. I have so many bringing me bottles that they bought off Amazon. We know that CBD is not allowed on Amazon, but they bring me bottles and say, this didn't work. Why not? And so, yes, that educational piece is so important. I'm Hemp Haven, or we're Hemp Haven, because we recognize that the compounds coming from the cannabinoids in hemp are beneficial. We also know that there's a nutritional aspect to hemp as well. It is a protein substitute for our vegans. It is also great for the omega-3 fatty acids as well. And so I'm selling the hemp in either a pasta or as hemp seed oil or hemp seeds. So when you recognize it from the whole plant, that can be used as medicine, as well as other things. We have just touched on the surface, and I hope to one day be able to expand not only to hemp, but as we've transitioned here, or we're transitioning here in Virginia to a recreational state, I'm going to be first in line to be hopefully opening my doors as a complete comprehensive dispensary, providing that educational base, because I'm of the philosophy that all use is medicinal use.
That's great. And I have some great friends, females in the industry that I would love to connect you and kind of talk about their path, as we move along here. Cause I know they've, same kind of thing, from different industries and the value of cannabis and kind of their experience, So as we move closer to that recreational, kind of help you along with that process for sure. Now, in terms of the, Hemp Haven, you mentioned obviously, and that's a great thing that you have, right? Is that you're a nurse. People trust you already. You're already part of the most trusted profession, right? So you come in and people saying, oh my gosh, this person can actually talk to me about stuff, and not, it sucks when places don't have educated people in their employees, in their store, excuse me. But, you're talking about the growth that's been happening the last few months, especially during the, COVID time, right? Like you said, it's a good thing you didn't open up in March, I guess, right? Or you didn't open up in January, right? Maybe, God forbid, we wouldn't be having this conversation now, So it's amazing how timing kind of works out in that regard. Mention that growth. What's kind of been kind of the hardest thing for you in terms of that growth, either back then or now, and how you've been able to overcome that?
I think the hardest thing for me has been, I'm 57 years old, and this is my third profession. My third, transition. I've always been a nurse, so that's my primary foundation. And then I transitioned to be an educator. So I've been doing that for 15 years, but I've never been a business owner. It has been a very steep learning curve. I didn't know anything about setting up taxes, or I didn't know anything about how to manage inventory. I didn't know anything about getting LLCs and doing businesses as, because of course I can't have hemp in my banking name operate as a doing business as. So I think that has been the biggest challenge is transitioning from being that nurse and that educator to now wearing the hat of a business person. I am still my only employee. I do have plans to get somebody in here to help me, support me, et cetera, so I can have a few days off every now and then. I don't mind the work. I love the work. I look around at what I have built, and it's not so much satisfaction as to what I have done, but what I can offer. What I offer is so different from other models in our area, at least, because we do have several CBD stores, but they're not staffed by healthcare practitioners. And so with this model of understanding it from that perspective of being a professional in the healthcare area and having the expertise and the experience behind many different, many different layers between the education side, the research side, the practitioner side, I see it all. And so it's not so much that I'm having difficulty or I'm worried about what I'm doing. It's what is going to go on before or in front of me, right? I'm still trying to figure out the tax code, still trying to figure out how the state is going to look at my own business, especially if I look into transitioning to a recreational dispensary. So those are some big question marks for me, but I'm not one to back down from a challenge. I'm a phoenix. I have been shot down so many times, and I look at it as another opportunity. I never look at it as a failure. I look at it as another opportunity to reflect on what went wrong. How can I do better next time? Of course, you have an extrinsic motivating factors. You never encounter individuals who are willing to be their best with you. I've met, there's a lot of unethical individuals in this industry. Unfortunately, when you encounter them, you recognize them and you're like, oh, well, I'm not going to make that mistake again. So when you look at that as a learning experience, I have so much, I think, opportunity in front of me based on what I have learned just in the last year, trying to ramp this particular business up and understanding the pitfalls and the direction where I want to go. That's going to be, I think, instrumental to the success of any industry or any business, but especially when you think about how to loop in cannabis and hemp as a part of a population's normalcy, right? We're trying to normalize these behaviors. We're trying to normalize coming into this space versus maybe a smoke shop or a rec dispensary. And we're trying to make it seem that it's just a normal thing to do. And that's where I think the important aspect of being a nurse and operating at this time is making sure that people see me, they see the credentials, they see the experience, they see how my story is, that I wasn't always part of the industry, that I did come to it from a little bit of a different angle, and how I can contribute to not so much the industry, but contribute to that individual health and that individual wellness, because it all has a trickle effect throughout our communities.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's crazy, you know, in terms of sorry, I blanked there for a second. I apologize. No, it's crazy in terms of, you know, there's no such thing as being able to learn a business, you know, how to run it completely just through learning books and everything, right? You know, as a nurse, right? I mean, you're an educator. Probably so much of what you give over is just based off of course, the curriculum, but also on your own experience, you know, and that school of hard knocks, right? You know, it's and to be a business owner, sometimes that's the best educator, you know, in terms of getting in there and making those mistakes, unfortunately, right? Growing, and you can, you know, learn, and you can have mentors, and all that stuff's important, you know, and like I said, reading books, hearing what other people have done. And of course, you know, there's certain pathways to follow, right? Just like, you know, with Hemp Haven, right? That, okay, cool. These people are successful over here in Missouri. Why not do it over here in Virginia, right? You know, it's great. So being able to replicate and being able to do things that are already successful, but sometimes, you know, as you know, it's not easy, and we have to learn through failing and getting back up, right? And so, you know, on that note as well, you know, as we start to wind down here, you know, you have so much experience and so many things, right? You said you've transitioned 3 times over here already, right? Nurse, education, now business owner, and kind of those challenges that go along with that. Now, you know, I'd love to hear, you know, I ask every guest, I'd love to hear what you have to say in terms of how do you define success, right? You have all this experience and everything, and now doing this here as well. So, you know, in general, you know, whether it be professionally, personally, spiritually, in any realm, what does success look like for you?
Success is something from within. So you first have to be comfortable with it's that Maslow's hierarchy. You have to be self-actualized. You have to be comfortable with who you are, the decisions and choices that you have made that brought you to where you are right now. But that doesn't end there, right? You also have a future. We become stagnant as human beings unless we're thinking about and always considering what does tomorrow look like? What does next year look like? What does 5 years from now look like? So for me, success is a feeling that you are comfortable with whom you are, that you have come to a place where you are in your life that you can both be proud of and yet be still motivated enough to look to the future to say, well, what can I do next to improve my own way of being? That may be monetary. Monetary is low on my list of success. As I get older, there are certain, right, we all have pet peeves. There are certain pet peeves that I have. And when people define success only as money or popularity or the very, very shallow and inconsequential norms, those are not where we find success. Success comes from within. And those people who are successful, people are naturally attracted to them, not because of their money. Well, we hope not because of their money or their popularity, but we're hoping that they are, you know, they're attracted to the individual's success because of who they are and what they bring that can be possibly even better tomorrow. And so when I think of how success will be rolling out for me, my success will be measured by the health of my population. I'm successful in myself because I have met my obligations. I have met the challenges to myself to provide these types of services to my community. What that looks like in the next year, I'm not too concerned about it. I've already met those challenges and I can roll with them now that I'm in here and I can navigate what's going on and as we look at the world around us. But my success, or the success, I should say, of the business is going to be tied to the health of my community, how they are using these compounds, if they're using them appropriately and safely, if they are reaching out to me with questions and with ways that I can help promote education within my own community. That is going to be the external success that I see as this particular model grows in my community, as I provide the resources and the knowledge that this community needs in order to become healthier. I'm at heart a community nurse, a public health practitioner. I see on a population level how we need to address population health because we haven't been focused on that enough. We've been focused in this sick care model on the individual, and it seems to be a revolving door. And so success needs to happen in a broader space, which will then trickle down into the individual. So that's where I feel that success is. I've already had success. I've already been successful. I will be successful tomorrow because I'm looking forward to the next level of how I can improve my community and help them become more successful in their own health.
No, yeah, thank you for that. You know, it's like you said, it's something that's internal. It's, you know, people who are always looking for success outside, right? Generally disappointed time and time again, you know, so I love that, you know, and like you said, being able to help others, trickling down and turning that sick care really into healthcare, you know, I think that that's super important as well. So thank you so much. You know, as we close, how can listeners find out more about what you're doing there, Hemp Haven, in Chesapeake, and, you know, hopefully expanding to more locations, you said, and connect with you and buy your products and everything else?
Well, I do have a website, so it's Chesapeake.hemphaven.store. So I do have opportunity to do some online shopping there, and I ship for free across all the United States, and have lots of customers, as I mentioned, that have already been reordering from that platform. I'm also on the social media, so you can find me on the Facebook and you can find me on the Instagram because I try to promote more education through there. But mainly, I'm hoping to be in my college programs, connecting, you know, touching each one of my students. I put in my biography in every single one of my undergraduate and graduate courses that I am a cannabis nurse and that I do have the knowledge, and I do have the belief that we as nurses need to promote these educational based understandings to not only our profession and our healthcare peers, but also to our population, because they are asking questions about it and its use. They are asking where to buy it and how to use it and what it can be used for. And so as a nurse, we have to always recognize that safety is the number one priority, and helping our nursing students roll that into the curriculum. That's going to be my next endeavor as I work with populations of both nursing students, healthcare peers, and my customers in our community.
Amazing. Yeah, everybody check out what they have there. The website will be linked. Reach out to Dr. Foster. She's easily accessible and here to help you and answer your question, everything like that. So Dr. Foster, wow, what a pleasure. It's been really, really great having you on. I know I got so much out of it. Thank you so much, everybody, wherever you're listening as well, for tuning into this episode. I hope you guys got a lot out of it. So thanks again, Dr. Foster. Good luck to you the rest of the year and beyond.
Thank you. Thank you for connecting on LinkedIn, Maynard. I'm there too. So I hope to hear it and see you soon.
Thanks for listening to Dank Discussions. We are so grateful for each and every one of you. Please make sure you subscribe and leave a review. We want to continue making dank content you want to hear, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calican.com, That's G-R-O-W at C-A-L-A-C-A-N-N.com. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter for our latest updates.